All right, Mr. Isagary.
Good morning, judges. Robert Isagary for the appellate. One of the things, Judge, in this case that when I filed my very first motion to suppress, I had in mind the fact that if the motion was granted, obviously, the fruits of the illegal search would go on with the case. Well, it didn't happen that way. And as things turned out, I'm still saying to this court right now that I do not see how the government can grant a motion to suppress, that in the very thing that they suppressed was the language of a defendant who is saying, and they suppressed it even with a, even the government admitted that they had made an error. And so that part was admitted by the government, as the court has, I'm sure, read. And then yet they used that same evidence that was suppressed to allow the search of the house, saying that the appellant obviously consented to that search, or to the consent.
How is that the same evidence?
Ma'am?
How is that the same evidence that was suppressed?
I'm about to tell the court. Even in the government's brief, the government states out the terms, the conditions in which a judge, a state judge, the district judge, the trial judge, if I may, should consider before he agrees to the consent or says that it was a consent. There are six different things the judge had to determine. One was the voluntariness of the defendant's custodial status. The defendant in this case, Judge, was immediately arrested. I mean, the minute that he said that he was a Mexican citizen, handcuffs were put on him, and he was arrested. Not only was he arrested at that time, and the government says, yes, well, he was arrested, but he was arrested because he was here illegally. But yet, at that very moment that he's arrested and handcuffed, they start asking him questions such as, were you back there 2.5 blocks away from me in that house? Were you in there? Who was in the Mercedes-Benz that just left from there? So they were already questioning him about things, Judge, that were related to an investigation that they had, not because he was an immigrant. I mean, they already were focused on that. Eventually, they start driving him down. The second, the presence of coercive measures by the police. Immediately, they put him back in their truck to take him back to the house. The record shows that. And they start questioning him some more all the way down there, trying to get his consent. They talk about also the third is the extent of the level of the defense cooperation. Well, he had already asked for a lawyer. Once they started telling him that who left in the Mercedes-Benz, he started saying, I want a lawyer, and I want a lawyer. And this is a person who can't speak English. This is a person who doesn't have an education in the United States, a person who had just been in that house for 15 days, and he admits to everything, but they never gave him his Miranda warning. When they do, then the judge says everything that the defendant says is, in this particular case, the state court, the trial court said, well, you know, all these things, the only one thing that the court said is when the defendant took the stand on the motion to suppress, I don't know that I believe him. All of the officers that had been on, and they talk about the awareness of the neck, the fourth is the awareness of the of his rights to refuse consent. Nobody, you're not going to find it anywhere on the record after one, two, three different policemen would talk to him, ask him to consent, tell him it'll go a lot better for him because he'll tell the district attorney. One of them says, if you don't, by God, you're going to spend the rest of your life in the penitentiary. So there was a lot of coercion here. There was things that did not come out in the record. Officer Renault, at one time when the main officer, Ramirez, was trying to get consent from the client, and he wouldn't give it. So then he got out of the truck. Officer Renault got back into the truck and started questioning him some more. All about the same thing, give us consent, it'll be better for you, it'll be. So obviously when they start talking about in the briefs, well, everything looks real nice. Well, he was very cool, he was very calm. They talk about the way the defendant was acting. Of course he wasn't. He was scared to death. I mean, he knew, he had already told him everything. And then eventually, they couldn't get into the house. He had to help them get in. Even though he gave them the keys, they couldn't open the door. He goes after he had consented. After three different officers on different occasions are questioning him and conned him into letting him do that.
Can you help me for a second, counsel? I'm confused. I understand you to be arguing now that he didn't have a voluntary consent, but I thought that you opened your argument by arguing that the court, that the police relied upon the suppressed statements to support the search, and that therefore they were illegal. And it seems like those are two different arguments. And I was asking, what is there evidence that the police relied on the suppressed statements to do the search? Those are two different arguments, I think. Yes. So can you help me?
The Fourth and the Fifth Amendment, both. And I'm saying they were both violated. I mean, there is no evidence in there that they ever told him that he didn't have to sign. It was three different people. He had already admitted all that was suppressed. If it was suppressed, how could they then use that same thing that they suppressed to come over and conjure and con the client into saying, oh, this is a voluntary consent. And as a matter of fact, he helped us a lot. I can't see it, Judge. I mean, in any way you look at it. This follows Green. It follows a couple of cases that I cited to the court. My brief was very, very brief.
Counsel, excuse me. Assume that you have an Edwards violation now.
Sir?
Assume that here that you have an Edwards violation, that is, that the request for a lawyer was made and it should have stopped the interrogation. Why isn't it permissible then to suppress any testimonial evidence that was produced after the request for a lawyer, but admit into evidence any non-testimonial evidence that may have been produced by it?
But it was testimonial, Judge.
Well,
what he told them was testimonial, was
No, as I understood it, what the evidence that came in was the result of the search.
It was a result of the search after the admissions that the client had made that were suppressed.
I understand.
Okay? And then they used those same admissions to tell him, well, you know, if there's marijuana in there, you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life. You know, we'll tell the government to help you, so on and so forth. And it takes them three or four different times with two different officers. And then they say that's consensual? I don't think so. I mean, I think a person with his education that didn't know anything was scared to death. And they scared him more with all of that. And that's why he consented. And what he consented to was what he had already told him that had been suppressed. And the way I see it, Judge, both, not only his Fourth Amendment rights, but his Fifth Amendment rights were violated. And that's in my brief. And I differentiated the Garcia case that the government is going to talk about, but the important thing to me is the way that this evidence was used.
All right, thank you, Mr. Gary. You've saved time for rebuttal. Mr. Turner?
May it please the Court, Jim Turner for the government. I believe this case turns basically upon how the district court and the district court below ably handled a situation broaching the Fifth Amendment violation, which the government conceded was abrogated, when the officer continued to question him after he was under arrest for being an illegal alien during the two-minute drive from the site of the arrest back to the subject of the search, the stash house on 27th Street. And the Fourth Amendment, and the judge was concerned to the extent that he had one hearing in which four officers testified, describing a 5 to 6 week investigation leading up to the events of April 19th, 2011, which was the encounter with Mr. Special Agent Ramirez and Mr. Gonzalez-Garcia, and the ultimate search, the search of the house. During the course of that 6 weeks, there were many drive-bys, et cetera. That's all clear from the record. In the end, they see a Mercedes-Benz depart. The officers, not having enough information to go knocking on the door, they want more information, trying to connect somebody to this house. They pursue the Mercedes-Benz. They also pursue a Toyota Corolla. Both of those prove evasive. During the course of the pursuit of the Mercedes-Benz, they observe the Mercedes-Benz driver talking on the telephone briefly, and almost simultaneously, within minutes, they see Mr. Leonardo Gonzalez-Garcia, another officer stationed back at the house, sees him emerge and rapidly move away from the house. They lose the Mercedes-Benz. Special Agent Ramirez abandons that pursuit, goes back to the house. He sees Mr. Gonzalez-Garcia about a block and a half from the search house, and he stops him. And his first question is, where are you coming from? Now, the record's going to show, and the district judge found, that the answers in this case were evasive. There was no answer, so I'm walking. That's basically what he was saying. He didn't give him any direct answer. Did you come from a house on 27th Street? He admits yes. Now, about this time, there are one or two officers come by. But still, it's no threatening, no circumstance. It's a man that's fleeing from a house, clearly, ostensibly by virtue of a phone call from an associate telling him to get away from the stash house. He also has a bulge in his pocket, which concerns the officer, or Special Agent Ramirez, sufficiently to pat him down. And it turns out he has $4,000 in cash and a cellular telephone. Someone, another agent, says to Special Agent Ramirez, is he here legally? He says, are you a United States citizen? Mr. Gonzalez-Garcia says, no, I am not. He's arrested. He is then transported. Before he's transported back to the house, that's when they handcuff him, and he's put into the truck, and it's just he and Special Agent Ramirez in a truck. Driving back to the house at a one or two minute interval, Special Agent Ramirez asked the question, is there marijuana in that house? How long have you been in that house? The answer is both yes and yes. And it dawns on Special Agent Ramirez that you better give him a Miranda warning at this juncture. And he begins to do so. And before he can complete the Miranda warning, Mr. Gonzalez-Garcia uses a word, it's either abogado or licenciado, the record's unclear as precisely which one he used, but it sounded to Special Agent Ramirez like he asked for a lawyer. And Special Agent Ramirez stopped at that juncture. Didn't ask another question, consulted with, I think it was Special Agent Renald or another supervisor, and was advised, see if he will consent to a search in the house. So the Fifth Amendment's implicated within that first 3 minute span of the drive back to the house. We admit that those statements made, the admissions that there's marijuana in the house, he knew there was marijuana in the house, have to be suppressed. And the district judge suppresses them. When especially Ramirez says, see if you'll consent to the house, he asks him a straightforward question with any other implications that, will you consent to a search of the house? And there is no answer at all at that for the first question. Second time he asks him, will you consent to a search of the house? And the answer this time is, it's not one of yes or no, is what's in it for me, in effect. So he's now trying, as he's forgot about his counsel, and he's now trying to work out something for himself at this juncture. The special agent didn't browbeat him, didn't explain anything. He said, all I can do is advise the prosecutor that you've cooperated. He asked him a third time, will you cooperate, or will you consent to a search of the house? And once again, there's a long pause, and what's in it for me? And again, the same advice. At this point in time, another officer gets in the car. He doesn't apparently browbeat him. Now, the testimony is one didn't hear what he said. What Special Agent Renald said was, I advised him what the process would be. We'd get a search warrant, we do this, we do that, and there was some benefit to cooperation. He gets out of the car. Special Agent Ramirez asks a fourth time, will you consent to a search of the house? Now, before he consents, yes, this time. But before he consents, before they enter, they give him the form. And on that form, it advises him that he has the right to refuse consent. So he knows that he has a right to refuse at this juncture. Still, he signs on that. So the execution of the search goes about this wise. They go up to the house. Excuse me?
It's in Spanish?
It's in Spanish and English. Yes, ma'am. Your Honor. So they go up to the house. They had the key from before when they did the pat-down search. The officers can't unlock the door. He voluntarily shows them how to unlock the door by reaching around the inside of the bar and swinging it open. As they open the door, the smell of marijuana comes out into the street. There were 2,000 kilograms of marijuana in that house. It literally reeked of marijuana before they even entered. So the judge very carefully, in the end, evaluated the six factors that are used to determine whether this consent was voluntary. He said, yes, you were in custody. The judge's concern was, can they now ask for your consent? The courts have consistently held, this court in Garcia and every court elsewhere, that this is not a custodial, this is not asked for testimonial information. There's a Fourth Amendment. It implicates strictly the Fourth Amendment, so there's no testimonial offer here. Will you consent to the search? There's no evidence of coercive police procedures here. Guns aren't drawn. There's no browbeating. He says there was. And yes, the judge did make a finding because he held a second hearing in which Gonzalez-Garcia had a chance to testify by himself. And the judge says, I think you're exaggerating this. I don't believe you and Toto. I believe the officers were consistent. I believe them.
Now, they already knew where the house was because of their investigation. They didn't rely on his statements to find the house or anything.
No, Your Honor, they did not. They knew that. In fact, he was denying he came from the house initially. They had to...
Right, but the fact that they wanted consent to search that house had nothing to do with his testimonial statements.
No.
They already wanted to search that house.
Yes, Your Honor, that is precise. That was the entire theory of the government's pressing in this case. He knew there was contraband in the house. He showed his awareness of his right to refuse consent. Well, he had his right to refuse consent. That was showed by the form. And he had a certain level of street intelligence because he knew at least to ask for an attorney and then to try to make a deal for himself during the course of his talks with the officers. I would suggest to the court that on this record, the court did not err legally or factually in denying the motion to suppress the marijuana.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Mr. Isagiri, you save time for rebuttal.
Your Honor, the government's correct on the way that it happened. And even through the argument of the government, the court can tell how many times they had to go back and talk to this man who is a Mexican citizen who does not speak English, who is not educated, you know, and so to speak, get his consent that way. I think that's a way of conjure, or a way of, I don't think that's right. It was something that this Fifth Circuit in Green went along, in the case of Green, went strictly down the line on that, and you did fine. And that was exactly what happened here in that case, and they found it was testimonial. So they reversed that case. I'm going to rest on my brief, Judge. And I hope, I used to have an old friend of mine who's passed away now, but he always used to tell me, I hope the kilo rule doesn't get you.
All right, thank you.
In this case, there's a lot of kilos.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Isgary. Yeah. Your case is under submission. The court will take a brief recess.